From Iowa Public Radio, I'm Janine Beck, and this is The Exchange. The National Institute of Mental Health estimates 1 in 4 adults suffer from a mental disorder, and 6% suffer from serious mental illness. What's the government's role in treating mental illness? Should the state require broader insurance coverage? And is there adequate institutional care? The Iowa legislature is debating the cost of treatment and services and how best to deliver care statewide. This morning on The Exchange, we pick up the conversation with a mental health professional and a representative from the insurance industry. In the second half of the program, Department of Human Services Director Charlie Krogmeyer discusses closing one of the state's 4 mental health institutes. That's coming up next. But first, the news. Of the State Capitol Building in Des Moines, I'm Janine Beck, and this is The Exchange. Today on the program, a discussion of mental health services in Iowa. During the first half, we'll debate legislation that would mandate broader insurance coverage for mental illness. And in the second half of the program, Department of Human Services Director Charlie Krogmeyer discusses closing one of the state's 4 mental health institutes. In 2005, the Iowa legislature voted to require companies that employ 50 people or more and provide health insurance to begin covering treatment of biologically based mental illnesses. Ever since, advocacy groups have been working to amend the law to broaden the list of illnesses to cover things like eating disorders, post-traumatic stress disorder, or drug and alcohol addiction. Today, my guests are the president of the Iowa Mental Health Counselors Association, Cindy Boyle, and the executive director of the Federation of Iowa Insurers, Paula Dierenfeld. Thank you so much for being here, both of you. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure being here.
Cindy is with us at the studios in Cedar Falls. And Cindy, you can hear us all right?
I sure can.
Thanks so much for being with us. Well, let me start with you. This legislation was brought up last year, made it out of committee in the House, but did not make it much further than that. Let me ask you, are you supportive of definitions that would broaden insurance coverage for mental illness?
Absolutely. One thing that continues to be frustrating to me is this, that we kind of separate the idea of medical versus mental illness. I mean, we're really behind the technology with the legislation, because we now know with new brain imaging techniques out there that the majority of mental illness is biologically based.
What should be covered that isn't currently today?
Well, it's really, what I see in my practice is a restriction of access by people that have higher copays or higher deductibles to get access to the mental health services.
Things like?
Very typical things like depression, anxiety, things that are listed as mental health issues.
Paula, the Iowa Federation of Insurers has been opposed to this legislation in large part due to concerns about cost. But let me just back up one section when Cindy talked about considering this a physical illness. Mental illness, why do they need to be separated? We don't list certain things you can get coverage for if you break your leg or break your arm. Mm-hmm. So are we treating it differently, and is that just on a broader argument wrong?
Well, let me back up just maybe even a step further than that, Janine, and say that the Federation of Iowa Insurers is not opposed to Iowans having the kind of coverage that this bill would propose to require Iowans to purchase. We are opposed to the bill. And the reason why we're opposed to the bill is because it requires certain Iowans to buy this coverage, which in the bill is the broadest, most comprehensive mental health and substance abuse coverage that is available. All Iowans currently do have can purchase that insurance if they want it. That is insurance coverage that all of our insurance companies currently sell. If Iowans want to buy that insurance, they can buy that insurance. Some choose not to because they either don't believe they need the coverage, or it's just simply too expensive for them. It's too costly for them, so they buy something less.
And when you say so an individual Iowan, it may or may not be offered to them, though, by their employer, correct? I mean, most people get their insurance through the old-fashioned system of it's something the employer offers to them, and they pay a premium for that. If the employer doesn't offer that, you're saying they could go out on the market and purchase it themselves.
Well, they could. That's probably unlikely that they would do that. We currently do have a mental health mandate in Iowa law, and it applies to the state's largest employers, those that are 50 and above, who are not self-insured. If they're self-insured, then federal law exempts them from the mandate requirement. The current mental health mandate that we have in the law does not apply to employers that have less than 50 unless they already provide some mental health coverage, and then the mandate does apply to them. It does not apply to individuals, those families that have to purchase their own insurance.
Who pays for it when they don't get it? Let me ask you that, Cindy. If one of the concerns has been, well, requiring people to buy something they may or may not need, but if somebody comes to you, needs treatment, doesn't have coverage, they either go without, I mean, does it get paid for some other way?
I'm just going to speak from my own experience. I am very passionate about the work I do, and this is one of the problems that I have. Again, we're talking about access. If, say, a client is working for a company, they have access to this insurance. For whatever reason, they lose their job. It's not related to any sort of mental illness. I've been treating them, say, for depression. They no longer have insurance. Myself, I continue to treat the person, because when you have those kind of environmental stressors going on with someone who's already dealing with a mental illness, the repercussions of that being untreated are felt not just with that individual, but that individual's family. And that's the problem that I see with not requiring it, is it is just a domino effect. When mental illness is not treated, it does not just affect the single person that's dealing with the illness, but it affects their family. It can affect coworkers. And so I think it's just, I don't know, I don't like arguing it from a financial standpoint, because I think this is just a general health issue. And I think you could argue it from a financial standpoint when you look at lost days and you look at money that we put aside dealing with kids that are considered at risk. And I don't know what could be more at risk than having families that have mental illness going untreated.
So when it gets boiled down to a financial issue, which it largely does here at the State House many times, your argument is that there's a social issue and a social cost broader than that. Is there, if these illnesses are not covered, do we continue to have a stigma attached to them, in part because they're not covered, because then we think they're different than a physical illness?
I absolutely think so. And I mean, that's the other part of the issue, is that, you know, we had the case of Michelle Kehoe, who had a mental illness, and look what happened with that case.
That's
when that wasn't
the Eastern Iowa mother who was accused and, well, convicted of murdering one son and injuring another.
And that's an extreme example. But, you know, in my own experience, I do a lot of work with kids. I go into schools when it warrants me doing that. And I have worked with 8 and 9 year old girls when I've gone into the school regarding bullying issues, who are actually having symptoms of post-traumatic stress secondary to witnessing violence against their mothers by their boyfriends. I mean, so it's just a huge issue. And I think it can, when you look at the cost, like I say, that goes to the schools for those kind of programs. I mean, last year, when I was looking at the budget last year, we put nearly $11.5 million of the budget towards programs to deal with, quote, at-risk kids. So,
all right. You're listening to The Exchange on Iowa Public Radio. We're discussing a law, a proposed legislation that would require insurance coverage costs relating to mental health conditions, broadening the mental health parity law in Iowa to include alcohol or substance abuse treatment, also other illnesses like post-traumatic stress disorder, eating disorders. If you can join our conversation, call us at 1-866-780-9100. Have you dealt with mental illness in your family? Have you dealt with insurance coverage? 1-866-780-9100. Paula, many people say, well, you know, I support broader coverage, but I don't want higher insurance rates. Is that the concern?
Well, that certainly is a concern. And the fact of the matter is, if you require, as this bill would, Iowans to purchase more insurance coverage, it's going to cost them more money.
Will it save us as taxpayers, though? Because one of the arguments that the main sponsor of this bill, Representative Beth Wessel Crochelle of Ames, makes is that, you know, the prisons are full of people with mental illness. Counties, the Iowa Association of Counties backs this legislation because they say they bear the brunt of mental health services in their communities. would we see an offset, do you believe, as taxpayers, if the private sector bore that, if we bore it as citizens versus as taxpayers?
Mm-hmm. And I've heard those arguments as well, Janine. I guess the problem that I have with those arguments is that this mandate would require people who are purchasing insurance to also purchase the mental health and mm-hmm. substance abuse coverage. Many people in our prison systems, many people that the counties are providing services to, simply don't have insurance. So it doesn't solve their problem.
So we're many times it's the uninsured that are suffering, and so we end up covering a group of people that maybe won't use it.
Maybe not, but certainly if that's what we've identified as the problem, the individuals that are in our prison systems or the individuals that are receiving services from the counties, this bill will not solve that problem.
Can we look to other states? I know there's been a lot of argument back and forth on both sides about what the cost would be. We've seen everything from rates would go up 1-2%, rates, insurance rates might go up 5-10%. Is another state... Where would this put us compared to other states in broad legal terms of how our definition of mental illness compares to others and required coverage and we fall in the line of 50?
Sure, absolutely. Good question. We've taken a look at what other states require. And currently, the approach that Iowa takes in terms of just applying it to the largest employers and requiring coverage for the most severe mental illnesses, that puts us in the mainstream of where most states are. 26, 27 other states take a very similar approach to what Iowa does. If you look at what's proposed in House File 234, which is the legislation that we're talking about, it would put us right at the very top in terms of the most comprehensive piece of legislation in the country, up with Maryland and just a handful of states. We took a look then at not only what those states require in their law, but what the cost impact has been in those states. And Maryland has probably the best information available. Every year, their state legislature requires them to do a review of their health insurance mandates. And the information based on their experience with a law that is very similar to what's being proposed in House File 234 shows that it has increased premiums for residents of Maryland by 5-6%, depending on whether or not they have an individual policy or whether it's an employer-provided policy. So we're talking 5-6% increase in those premiums just for this one mandate alone.
All right. You're listening to The Exchange on Iowa Public Radio. We're going to open the conversation up to your calls when we return in just a few moments. 1-866-780-9100 is the number to call. Again, if you have a question or comment, 1-866-780-9100. You're listening to The Exchange on Iowa Public Radio. You're listening to The Exchange on Iowa Public Radio. I'm Janine Beck. My guest this morning, or this afternoon, the president of the Iowa Mental Health Counselors Association, Cindy Boyle, and the executive director of the Federation of Iowa Insurers, Paula Dierenfeld. We're discussing Iowa's mental health parity law, which requires insurance coverage for mental illness. Legislators, some in the majority party, the Democratic Party, would like to expand the list of illnesses covered under that law to include things like eating disorders, post-traumatic stress disorder, and in some cases, drug and alcohol addiction. And let me ask you, Cindy Boyle, to some, that seems like a pretty broad definition. Some people wouldn't consider drug and alcohol addiction a mental illness. Some will say, well, no, that's a substance abuse problem. We shouldn't wrap that in with mental illness. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think that just goes back to the idea of there is still to this day such a stigma surrounding mental illness, sort of the idea that it's not a real illness, it's all in your head, or you have some sort of weak constitution. Again, I mean, there's so much research out there. There are biological bases for addiction, just as there are for depression, just as there are for anxiety. And what I think really needs to happen, and I would love to see Iowa be at the top, you know, relative to other states as far as being comprehensive and providing coverage, is there needs to be a paradigm shift. We need to look at what is most effective. Early intervention is most effective, and people can be treated early, and then you're not going to see these situations where generation after generation we've got kids coming up with parents in prison and kids going down that same road. And the research shows that a medical treatment, such as, you know, some a medication for depression, along with therapy over and over and over again, the research shows that that is the most efficacious treatment for virtually every type of mental illness.
Is there any sort of study that shows what prevents people from seeking treatment? Is it insurance coverage? Is it stigma? Is it a misunderstanding of, I mean, do you think if this bill were adopted that more people would seek treatment, or would they still not seek treatment because they don't understand, or they don't believe there's anything wrong with them?
Well, I think we have a long way to go with informing people. And I think, I mean, I'm actually frustrated by the fact that we have to separate addictions out from other mental illnesses, because they really aren't, they aren't separate. I mean, it's suggesting, like you said, that, you know, some people think this is just sort of a behavioral thing, that there is not a actual biological or medical basis to it. You know what? I got sidetracked. Janine, can you?
Well, I just wonder, do you believe more people would seek treatment if this law were adopted?
Well, what I certainly think is that more people would have access to seek treatment. And I think that's where you start. There still needs to be a whole bunch of education. But I think when, as legislators, we don't make it a priority, it's suggesting that it's less important than other treatments.
All right. Paula, one of the things that was a concern last session, and I haven't known if this has changed, but the initial legislation approved a couple of years ago did carve out an exemption for small businesses, mm-hmm. very small businesses, but that the legislation introduced last session did not. Does that remain a concern?
Oh, absolutely. And again, let me just say that, you know, to the extent that Iowans want this kind of coverage, those insurance products are available to all Iowans who want to purchase them today. The current mandate that we have on the books does apply only to larger employers, those 50 and above. It does not apply to small employers unless they are already providing some mental health coverage, and then the mandate does apply to them. It does not apply to individuals at all, which means if a family has to purchase their own insurance, the current mandate does not apply to them. What this bill proposes to do is to require coverage for all mental illnesses, all substance abuse treatment, and would require everyone who has to buy their own insurance, either through their employer or for themselves, it would require them to purchase it. So large employers, 50 and above, smaller employers, 50 and below, as well as those individual families who have to purchase their own insurance, this mandate would apply to.
You made the argument last year when this was in committee that you thought that this might be the tipping point for some, that small businesses would stop offering health insurance coverage if they had to add this, or that some people that used to purchase their own insurance would stop buying insurance.
It could very well, and it relates to the fact that you're going to see premium increases if they are required to purchase this kind of insurance. You know, we have a situation in the state right now we have an economic crisis. We have lots of Iowans that are losing their jobs. 40,000 more this year at this time than last year. We have over 100,000 people in the state looking for jobs right now. I mean, it's going to make the economic situation that we have even worse.
All right. Let's go to the phone. Steve is in calling us from Cedar Rapids. Steve, thanks for joining the program.
Hi, thanks for having me. Hey, Mike, I just wanted to reinforce, I do have a serious mental illness, by the way, and I just wanted to reinforce the biological basis and the stigma that I think we feel. I think when people hear the word mental illness, they're kind of like, you know, what is that? It's kind of mystical or something. And I think when we point out that it's the brain, it's just the brain that is affected, which is a part of the body, it should be treated that way.
And so your argument is that it is... Stop saying mental illness versus physical illness. I mean, the brain is an organ. Let's treat it as just part of the body.
And it really is. I mean, like the guest was saying, MRI, the MRI stuff that like Nancy Andreasen is doing down at the university, it's very proven that it is just the brain that's affected. And just briefly, another thing that's going through the State House right now is what they call the preferred drug list, where legislators are trying to figure out what medications, psychiatric medications, people will be allowed to use. And my concern is legislators telling what medications they'll pay for. I feel it should be between the doctor and the patient alone.
Mm-hmm. And Director, Department of Human Services Director Charlie Krogmeyer is going to be on in the second half of the program. We'll ask him about that, Steve, because that's a good point. The preferred drug list is an issue when in dealing with mental illness.
And I think the people that just aren't around mental illness, like the guest said, 25% of the population has it. If you don't know someone personally, you're running into people, and we have to just raise awareness to how common these things are, and we need to start figuring out ways to deal with them on a logical sort of course.
Thanks for your call, Steve. I appreciate it. I want to try to squeeze in one more. Ben is calling from the road today. Ben, thank you for calling The Exchange.
Thanks for having me. I'm a criminal defense attorney. In fact, I'm just returning to Des Moines from a hearing, or two hearings, one of which involves substance abuse. And if you ask anyone that is in criminal law, mental health and substance abuse is a frequent problem. In fact, probably more frequent than the people that just have a bad heart and commit the crimes that are listed in the Iowa Code. And if we're really serious about people not breaking into homes and not committing assaults and not robbing things and not doing all those things that are prohibited by Iowa law, then the people that promulgate those laws need to find solutions. I mean, it's pretty low-hanging fruit to go crime and punishment, but if we're really serious about preventing these crimes, we have to do something about mental illness and substance abuse. I agree that insurance probably doesn't serve the people, or forcing everyone to have insurance doesn't serve the people that need it most, and probably needs to come, funding needs to come from sources other than that.
So we need better treatment options, but requiring or mandating health insurance may not be the solution.
I would have to agree with that. I mean, most of the folks that I'm representing don't have the $8,000 or $9,000 to go to the various treatment centers in Iowa. In fact, most middle class families don't have that money either.
All right, Ben, thanks so much for your call. We really appreciate it. Let me ask you, Paula, before we go, what are the chances of this legislation this session? It seems like in a brief session, an issue this big would be a difficult hurdle. On the other hand, legislators have been trying to expand this law ever since it was adopted in 2005.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, we're continuing to have conversation with legislators about this proposal. Given the current budget situation in the state, I think it's going to be difficult for the legislature to come up with the funding that they need to even cover the state employees that would be covered by this legislation. A fiscal note that was prepared last year showed that it would have an impact on the state's budget just for the state employee plans of up to $3 million. So, you know, they have to take that into consideration, just as our families and small employers have to, if this mandate were to pass.
Just a few seconds left. Cindy, will you keep working on this?
Absolutely. I mean, I kind of have a problem with the idea that, oh, this is available, this is out there, anybody who wants it can purchase it. Well, Lexuses are out there, and anybody who wants those, I can't purchase one. You got to have the funds and the availability.
All right. Thank you both so much for your time today. I really appreciate it. You're listening to The Exchange on Iowa Public Radio. When we come back, Department of Human Services Director Charlie Krogmeyer talks about access to mental health treatment in Iowa, the state's role in that, and whether or not the state should close one of its four mental health institutes. We'll be right back on The Exchange on Iowa Public Radio. Live from the Law Library of the State Capitol Building in Des Moines, I'm Janine Beck, and this is The Exchange. To save money, the legislature asked the Department of Human Services to recommend closing one of the state's four mental health facilities. DHS selected the oldest in Mount Pleasant, but last week, Des Moines Senator Jack Hatch said after further study, he thought legislators believe the substance abuse treatment provided at that site was too valuable, and the state may be better off closing Clarinda instead. Here to discuss all of that is the Department of Human Services Director Charlie Krogmeyer. Thank you very much for being here, Director.
You're welcome.
Let me start by playing a couple of sound bites from that committee last week, and I want to begin with Representative Roe Feggy. And Representative Feggy is a former state lawmaker from Mount Vernon, a Democrat, who served on a task force appointed by the governor on the legislature's behalf to look into this issue. And here's what he told committee members last week.
Our very first recommendation was there should be no facility closed, at least until there are appropriate support systems in place to do that. Now, I don't think we ever said never close a mental health institute. We said make sure that people get the service that they need.
Despite their recommendation not to close a facility, the legislature did ask the DHS to recommend closing a facility. And as I said, you guys initially suggested that Mount Pleasant might be the least disruptive if one needed to be closed. But Des Moines Senator Jack Hatch, a Democrat, suggested that Clarinda might be a better option. Here's a Senator Hatch's comment.
And nobody likes to close a facility. So we had to give a better reason than just because the department recommended. So once we got into it, we saw that there were savings, but there was also some logic behind moving three different populations around so that we can consolidate and still save money.
Let me just ask you, through all of this, first you were put in the position of recommending closing a facility. Did you even believe a facility should be closed?
Well, the legislature asked us to recommend closing one if they chose to close one. So we looked at it in that context. And I have said publicly that if we are going to close MHIs, I sort of agree with former Representative Feggy, it needs to be in the context of a discussion of the full range of mental health services, both at our MHIs and other facilities, as well as in community-based programs. And that's the discussion we need to have as to what the system of care, the mental health system of care, needs to be in Iowa and how we move towards that.
Was it a difficult decision when you looked at the four of them, because they each provide some of the same services, but they also have their own subsection of services? You know, Mount Pleasant had the substance abuse treatment.
Right.
Clarinda had the services for geriatric patients that have troubled pasts. So each one offered a different benefit, if you will.
Right. Each of the MHIs provide services to adult mental health patients in an acute care hospital setting, and they've done that for a long time. And then over recent years, the last 10, 20 years, each of them have developed expertise or specialized kinds of programs, as you mentioned, the substance abuse program at Mount Pleasant and the dual diagnosis program at Mount Pleasant for people who have substance abuse issues and mental health mm-hmm. issues, which is not unusual. Clarinda has the adult mental health services plus the geriatric psychiatric program. Cherokee has adult mental health plus a children's psychiatric program and the sex offender program. Independence has children, adults, and some other services. So each of them have their own areas. And that made the decision or the recommendation we made on Mount Pleasant a little clearer, because as we went through the analysis, fairly quickly we determined the state has invested a lot of money, a lot of staff, and as well as capital costs in Cherokee on the sexual offender unit. Mm-hmm. Wasn't likely we were going to move that anytime soon, and that'd be very tremendously expensive to do. Plus, Cherokee and Independence both provide services for children. So it didn't make sense to relocate children's psychiatric programs on campuses in Clarinda or Mount Pleasant that also have a prison setting. Mm-hmm. So we kind of ruled those two northern ones out.
Unsafe, in your opinion, to do.
Unsafe, and from a therapeutic and treatment standpoint, just didn't make sense. Mm-hmm. So we kind of ruled those two out in terms of closure, which then focuses on Mount Pleasant and Clarinda. And what we said in our report back in December was, Mount Pleasant caused the least disruption. It's the smallest. And it was easier to relocate all of those services, which the legislature asked us to do, in some other locations. And we could do that. Clarinda, on the other hand, we mentioned in our report and said that Clarinda could be a viable candidate for closure if a suitable alternative could be developed for the geriatric psychiatric program. We hadn't developed that. Hadn't been developed at the time we did our report in December. So we said Clarinda could be a possibility, but that was the stumbling block or the biggest issue there as to a closure of Clarinda. Moving the adult mental health beds from Clarinda to Cherokee or to Independence or some other location can be done in relatively short period of time. The Clarinda mental health side is about 20 beds. Mm-hmm. So it's not huge. It's not big. We've got capacity at a couple other places where those could be moved. Now, there are other issues there about service to the local area, but that moving them along could be done. The geropsych or geriatric psych unit is a little more complicated. Those individuals are old. They're geriatric patients who have severe mental health issues. A lot of them tend to be violent, tend to be difficult patients. Most of them have been in 3, 4, or 5 or more nursing homes or other settings, and they're difficult to place. So finding the right kind of physical facility, mm-hmm. Or remodeling something, as well as the staffing and other issues that you need to have, becomes more complicated.
You need particular training to deal with them, I'm sure, at least a particular patient's level that not all staff
right.
have.
Yeah, they're very difficult patients, and a lot of them are 2 staff to 1 patient on a pretty much continuous basis. So it's staffing levels, it's training, it's providing all of the services you need to provide in that setting. And not to say that it couldn't be done somewhere else, but there are complications, and it would take us a while to figure all that out and to walk through that.
You mentioned when you released this report in December that the cost savings were somewhat marginal because if you move the patients, it's not like you're closing one and eliminating that staff and right. eliminating those patients. You are moving them to another facility. So staffing ratios have to remain at a certain percentage. Beds have to remain, those kind of things. So is there a good reason to do this? Is the financial savings enough, or is there a broader reason in the terms that, well, you could provide better care for someone outside of an institution?
Well, that's not really the issue. Mm-hmm. In answer to your second question, can you provide better care outside of an institution? For some individuals, you can't. And that's something we've talked about and we need to talk a lot more about as state government and as a society and move in that direction more. And we'll be trying to push that agenda more in the next couple of years. The narrow question, though, being debated right now is closing an MHI and then relocating those same beds, those same services at the remaining MHIs. And that's where the savings are not huge. There are some savings. I think in the Mount Pleasant case, we had targeted those around $1 million or something like that a year, or maybe it was $1 million the first year, $1.5 million the second year. But there are also costs in relocating staff in sometimes remodeling or retrofitting facilities to handle the capacity.
That being said, when you heard Senator Hatch's newest proposal to close Clarinda, which has you told me as you came in that there are many officials from Clarinda here at the State House today, obviously lobbying against that when they found out last week. Is this a good idea, or is this trying to fit a square peg in a round hole in an attempt to save money in a tight budget year that may or may not save as much as needed?
Well, I think what Senator Hatch is trying to do from the discussions I've had with him, I think he's sincere that, one, he's looking for ways to save money. And he also feels that long term we need to move towards more of a community-based mental health system, and that in his mind means not having 4 state-run MHIs, having fewer, and this is a step in that direction. It's part of that longer, bigger discussion that he's trying to push.
So you think his end goal that he's using, and I don't mean this in a critical way, but using the current budget situation to push a broader agenda of saying, look, eventually we shouldn't have 4 because we should be providing service in a different way.
I think that's part of his analysis, yes.
All right. We're going to open this up to some sure. phone calls as well. I want to invite you to join our conversation this afternoon, 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100. Have you had a friend or family member at one of the state's mental health institutes? Have you used mental health services provided by the state? And is there a better way to provide those services? Please join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100. Senator Hatch proposed moving some of Clarinda's patients to Cherokee, and then those geriatric patients that you talked about that would be difficult to place to either the Veterans Home in Marshtown or even the Glenwood Resource Center, which is the home for the mentally disabled in Glenwood. Are those even viable options?
They may be. I think the Veterans Home in Marshalltown is not run by us, but I'm a little bit familiar with it. I mean, the Veterans Home in Marshalltown has 800 or 900 patients. It's a very large nursing mm-hmm. home. They would have some patients with similar kinds of diagnoses. Probably not quite as intense as some of them that we have, but they would have some. So there may be some compatibility there and some ways to do that. I think there's an issue with regard to the Veterans Administration and their license and how they're funded under the VA, which is different than ours, so we may have to work through that if we could do that. Glenwood has been mentioned as a possibility. There are possibly some buildings there. We're in the process of trying to analyze that. We think they'd be fairly expensive to remodel to make them suitable for this kind of facility. There's room on the campus. You could build a facility. There are really different kinds of services. I mean, there would be some benefits. I mean, we have a medical staff at Clarinda, so mm-hmm. doctors aren't necessarily fungible. Doctors aren't doctors, but we have a neurologist. We have certain kinds of doctors there that would be, there probably would be some
overlap.
Dietary and some of the other things could be shared in some ways. So there's possible issues, benefits there. But the care is a really different kind of care.
All right. When you look at this overall, you have also expressed a desire to change the way the state provides mental health services. Talk to me about that.
Well, I think, and we're in the process of working on a report and expect this summer to come out with a proposed state mental health services plan. And it's really a combination. There have been a lot of task forces and a lot of different groups meeting for years and different reports produced on what the mental health system should be. And we're pulling all that together. There was a group called the Acute Care Task Force that met for the last couple of years, made up of a lot of providers as well as consumers in the mental health system, and produced a whole series of recommendations. We're trying to pull all that together, and our hope is to come out with a report this summer suggesting here's what Iowa's mental health system should look like. And based upon what we know today about how we treat mental illness, the medications that are used nowadays, all of a lot of changes that have come about in the last 10 years, let alone the last 30 or 40 years, to try to move towards more of a community-based, consumer-driven system and less institutional-driven system. What we would hope to do is generate that report this summer, try to create some debate and some discussion. Some people will maybe like it, some may not like it all, and move the legislature, move the policymakers towards adopting a state system plan next year that we can then go ahead and try to implement. There will no doubt be issues, and there are going to be issues about how we pay for it. It may or may not cost more. We're spending a lot of money now as a state and as a society on mental health services. It may need to be directed in different ways. That has issues for some service providers. So I think we need to work through all of that, but really try to look at what kinds of needs are there? How do we serve those needs today? What kind of settings can they be provided in? And it's not DHS that's going to be providing them all. We may be funding a lot of them mm-hmm. through various programs that we fund. You know, even in the MHI context, we have, with our four mental health institutes, we have about 200 or 250 acute care hospital beds in the mental health area. There are about 800 and some total in the state. So we're a fourth or a third or something mm-hmm. of the total. There are other providers as well besides us.
All right. And one of the things that I want to touch on real quick before we go to the phones is that while the cost savings of closing one of the mental health institutes is relatively small in the grand scheme of the state budget, to one of these communities, whether it would be Mount Pleasant, whether it would be Clarinda, it is a sizable hit. Apparently, the Clarinda school superintendent told the task force when they visited that community that if it were just closed down and every one of the employees moved with their families, they'd lose 40 students in their small school. Well, 40 students in a small school is a big deal, and that's a big financial hit in the sense of per pupil spending from the state to them. So that's a difficult decision.
It is difficult, and it does impact those communities. There's mm-hmm. no question of that. And some of it impacts our employees. Mm-hmm. Some would choose to move, some would not. And it could, if not done in the right way, it could impact the level of care to the people in those communities. When you look at where the patients come from for our MHIs, particularly in Clarinda and Cherokee, if you look at their patient surveys and where their patients come from, they are really the mental health service providers in their regions of the state.
Mm-hmm.
The nearest other acute care beds in Clarinda would be Des Moines, or Omaha, Council Bluffs area. So they are, for a geographic area, And Cherokee is sort of the same thing. There are some adult mental health beds in Sioux City and in Ames, Mason City, but there's a large area in northwest Iowa where Cherokee is the local mental health hospital.
All right. Let's talk to Peggy in Iowa City. Peggy, thanks so much for calling the Exchange today.
Thank you for letting me be on. I work with the National Alliance on Mental Illness. I'm on their board of directors in Johnson County, and I have a daughter with schizophrenia. And I'd like to say that I believe if people were treated with other illnesses, were treated the way people with mental illness are, there would be such an outrage and such a public outrage that this, it just wouldn't happen. People with mental illness are very, very discriminated against, and there's such stigma. Couple more points. I believe as a parent that if I hadn't been around as a family member to advocate for my daughter, that she would at this time either be in jail, be homeless, or dead. And I believe other family members in the state would also be able to speak to that. Only one other point that I'd like to make, and this is that how common mental illness is, and people don't realize that one in four families are affected by mental illness. And there is a quote that I just love to tell because it's very telling. If you think mental illness isn't in your family, you haven't been to a family reunion lately. So, I mean, it is really very, very common, and people don't realize how it affects everyone.
All right. And Peggy, let me ask you, and I don't know, maybe you haven't dealt with this, but if the state were to close one of the mental health institutes, would you see a change in service for your family, or have you used services in other ways?
No, my daughter has been in Independence, which is one of the facilities in the past, and thankfully she is no longer in need of that level of care. And that, again, I believe is because of family advocacy and because I sought out support for her. But overall, I do think it would affect people. The state of Iowa, so the system is totally in shambles. NAMI, again, the National Alliance on Mental Illness, the acronym is NAMI, did a study of the different states and comparison of the states on different criteria. And in 2007, Iowa got an F, and in 2009, we came up to a D. So that's where we are, folks. And being high on education, we all know what that means, that we're not doing very well.
All right. Peggy, thanks so much for your call. One of the earlier calls we got, Director Krogmeier, was from Steve in Cedar Rapids, who said that one of his concerns is the preferred drug list. I know that that's something that the department is working on in hopes of saving money and saying, well, many insurance providers have a preferred drug list and ask patients to use the non-name brand or the generic version of something. But he has a concern, he says, with mental illness, sometimes there are very specific medications that they're prescribed, and that he's concerned if there's a preferred drug list under Medicaid or Medicare that the patients will be treated improperly.
Yeah, there's an issue, and the legislature is looking at adding psychotropic or mental health drugs to the preferred drug list. And the way the preferred drug list works, we have a medical review team, doctors and psychiatrists and others in the mental health that don't work for us, they're consultants to us, and they determine what goes on the preferred drug list. And they're usually drugs where we negotiate with the manufacturer some discounted rates, rebates, and other kinds of cost recovery. Sometimes they're generic, sometimes they're not. The idea is that they are biologically or chemically the same as other products. In the mental health arena, that's a little dicier. And part of it is, depending again upon the person's diagnosis and their method of treatment, they may be taking more than one mental health drug, psychotropic drug. And the combinations of the two are what are the doctors looking for in terms of helping them deal with the issues they have. So it's not quite as clear as I take a drug for cholesterol. A lot of us do at my age. And some of the chemical identifications of the drugs are basically the same. So one brand or another brand doesn't make any difference. In the mental health arena, it's a little bit more complicated. So that's an issue that we're trying to be sensitive to. There are definitely some cost savings if we can use those drugs and negotiate with those manufacturers. The proposal that the legislature is currently looking at would not affect anybody who currently is enrolled with Medicaid. It only affect who's currently receiving any particular drug. It would only affect new prescriptions issued in the future. And there's still an avenue for a doctor, for the prescribing doctor, to ask for a waiver, it's prior approval of issuing that drug for a particular medical reason that they can justify. Usually we turn those requests around within 2 hours. So the doctor can, the doctor's office can contact our Medicaid office, get the waiver, explain why it's appropriate, and we can do that. But we're projecting saving $400,000 to $500,000 by making this one change.
We don't have a lot of time left, but let me just ask you, we were meeting with senators earlier this morning. Any concerns about your confirmation? You're the gentleman who had this job briefly before you. The reason you're in this position is he was not confirmed by the state Senate. Do you expect any trouble in that regard?
I don't expect any, but you know, in this business, you never know. So I think it's going okay, but we'll find out.
All right. Director Krogmeyer, thank you so much for your time today and being with us. We appreciate it. You're listening to The Exchange on Iowa Public Radio. The program is produced by Catherine Perkins and Jeff Schmidt. We've had production assistance today from Ben Kiefer and Rosalind Sigsby. Technical support from Dennis Reese and John Pemble. Podcasting and on-demand audio of The Exchange available at iowapublicradio.org. I'm Janine Beck, and thanks for listening.